from the Royal Canadian Hibernaculum, located just 10 miles south of the magnetic North Pole. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, renowned referee, honored herpetologist, retired reptile rodeo clown, and number 7 on People Magazine's list of the 50 sexiest insurance agents of 1992, Peg Leg Greg Ringhausen. Also featuring author, inventor, first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the legal representative for the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, and also the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, Richard J. Ringhausen. And lastest and leastest, marksman, sculptor, yo-yoist, a man's man who can cook and eat Brussels sprouts, six-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion, and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, the youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers, and the star of your show, Alan Ringhausen.
I thought we were going to do the European clap. Okay, I had a question on the intro.
Yeah.
And really, this question is for Greg.
Oh, I can't wait.
Do you feel that you reached the pinnacle of your sexiness in 1992?
Well, we'd have to ask my wife that, but that was
maybe we could ask other women that.
No, unfortunately, it's just not
okay,
working.
But wait a minute.
This is why we don't have a van of white in here now. Because they couldn't control themselves around Greg.
Well, this is true.
Can't spend the whole episode with some hot young blonde sitting on Greg's lap.
I couldn't either.
Sexiness isn't just about, you know, marriage. It's about, you know, it's like People Magazine has the sexiest man alive. And they don't just ask his wife. It's a panel of judges that say, that guy is sexy.
Yeah, like Telly Savalas.
You look at
Savalas and you go, he's not. I mean, he's...
Boy, he loves you, baby.
He had his shirt off, man, and had his head shaved. That's enough. No, you know, I came up...
My head is being naturally shaved.
I think with Telly Savalas, not that many of our listeners actually remember who that is, but his sexiness was his confidence.
His attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Swagger.
And his lollipop.
Well, you know, considering how confident we all are,
right,
and swaggering we all are.
Right.
Y'all gave me a run for
my money.
There's
so much sexiness in this room, I'm surprised the wallpaper sticks.
The sexy tree hoe.
Oh, God.
That sounds kind of weird.
I gotta go. I got to, too.
But you didn't answer the question.
Oh, it's just that magnetic presence that I extrude when I walk into the room.
You're extruding something.
When you have like Christmas at Ringhausen household,
yeah, it's, you know, just you coming like, into the room
when you
is
walk
just
in and
amazing.
You say, make way for the sexiest man in the room.
No, it's the other way around. It's God, you're a sexy man.
Yes, he is.
That's just, Bruce, your brother Bruce, saying it.
He's saying a lot different than that.
What's today's episode?
Yes.
This is episode 13, my friends.
The sexy episode.
All of our listeners. Actually, you know, we've had a lot of different wrestling moves, but every so often.
The step over toe hold and the gator spins.
Full
and all
Nelson,
that stuff.
You know, all your classic moves. But every so often, the referee has to step in, blow his whistle, and say, illegal move. And that's what we have here. Just to keep our listeners in mind that every so often an illegal move will
you
be
can't just do anything
identified, I mean, and the match will be stopped.
Yeah, sometimes you watch instance, on like professional wrestlers, you get the feeling that they can just do whatever they want, but there are rules.
And in this particular instance, in episode 13, the illegal move was the alligator tearing off his opponent's arm. Illegal. That's an illegal move.
I don't think he tears it off, Alan.
He saws it off. Greg, does that bring back memories? episode of Leave It to Beaver, maybe?
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, I go back that far. Yep. Thank you.
When an alligator, he doesn't just bite your arm off. He saws it off.
Was that Uncle Joe from Petticoat
Junction?
It
was.
Uncle Joe. All
right, Greg has a secret topic today.
No, really. I was just I told you after the show this morning that I was going out to play golf with a friend of mine.
Somebody.
Yeah, somebody.
Wait. Back up a second. You went out to play golf with a friend of yours?
Was he sexy?
Not as much as me.
Well, how could anyone be?
That's what I'm saying. Can't match it.
Hey, Greg, this ain't 1992 anymore.
I understand. So it was a good day. And so got there and didn't warm up. So I don't need it today. I just go out and hit. And
yeah.
So I go out and get into the first tee box and take this mighty swing. And the ball goes about 15 feet. What makes it worse is there's a little old lady over on the next tee on the next hole that just smashed hers and went right down the middle of the fairway, and come to find out she's 100 years old. So
you got beat by a 100-year-old woman?
It was a great day, I'm telling you.
She turned around and gave you the finger?
Pretty much. She looked at me.
Loser!
She turned around and looked at me, went like... backed her head up, got in a cart, and drove off.
Nice swing, sexy.
You know, they say Babe Ruth wouldn't take batting practice. He'd just walk up and swat one.
He didn't exercise. He drank too much, ate too much. Just think if he had worked at it, what kind of a magnificent athlete he could have been.
Probably wouldn't have been better.
No, he'd probably been worse. Yeah. So that was my story of the day, and that's how we thought I'd get it off and started. My point is that you watch maybe a golf tournament and see how these guys hit the ball, and you think, man, I can do that. That's easy. Ain't easy.
Yeah, you watch them like in the U.S. Open, and you see some guy who's like ranked number 3 in the world, and he tees off, and it shags off into the rough, and you go, well, I could have done that.
Exactly.
Except you.
Yeah, and you could. Every single time.
That's the difference.
He does it 1 out of 100.
Except I don't spank it like 300 or 400 feet and hit it out of the rough.
Well, like I said, 15 feet for me today. It was a very, very great shot for me.
And did anybody say anything to you other than the old woman?
Well, my friend says he just started laughing, pretty much, you know, because he's looking at the lady hitting the ball across the next
she's a ball striker.
Yes, she
turned
was.
Around. Try tennis.
Yeah.
You're ready for pickleball.
Hey, see who's here 10 years from now, old woman.
She is, not me.
You should have tackled her.
she would have picked me
just
up and pinned
her
down.
Arm back behind her head. Yeah, who's so smart now?
So
no, she would have tied that club around your neck.
Okay, so my question. Let me pose a question.
Okay.
If you had did that and you were golfing with Rick and I.
Oh, you guys, I would just never.
You would have had the long shot. You would have used your ball.
I was just getting ready to say. Now, do either one of you own a set of clubs?
Yeah, you want me to go get them?
Do you have them down here?
Yeah, they're in the basement.
I've got a set of clubs at the house. I could probably find them.
Okay.
Well, there's only three in the bag.
That's all I use.
You know, a lot of the golf clubs or, you know, places where you play golf, the courses, will have collections of clubs that people have lost or abandoned that you can go. If you don't have clubs, they'll set you up with a bag of them to play at your course.
Well, I think there's a bag full of them down at the Godfrey, Illinois golf course where Brad threw his in the lake.
Well, he really threw his in the lake.
Yeah.
So when I was out in Arizona.
Our brother.
Yes.
Brad. He threw a bag of golf clubs
in
the lake.
I don't know if he threw a whole bag in, but he threw some.
Glove after glove.
I think so.
Like, what was the movie with Kevin Costner playing golf? Tin Cup?
Yeah.
Tin Cup.
Didn't he like throw all...
I don't like the 3-iron. I always shag this one to the left. That's a bad idea. You just put one after another. You just snapped them. You ever snap a golf club across your leg?
No. I threw one.
Man, he made it look real easy. I'm wondering if I could do that. Go get your clubs.
I get the strong feeling that you'll break your knee.
Yeah, I do too. Probably a bad idea. Bad. I get a bad feeling.
So... how's your putting?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. So you doesn't in a tournament designated putter?
They would use my shot almost every time.
I was in a foursome where they took count of the shots they used.
What's that face? Go ahead. What'd you say? Yeah.
No, it's all right.
Now, how many shots did they use of yours? Was yours the one that you're no, every, I just, every time you'd strike see, it and then tell the well, other guys, there put was, your clubs away, you ain't going to beat that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You just don't even shoot. I mean, you know, the ball's 3 feet from the pin, so you just say put them away and go up.
Nobody does that.
No.
Because
there are no gimmies.
There'll be that one time in a million where I'll hit the world's greatest shot and it'll plop down there and you'll act like you do it every time. And you'll never do it again.
Right.
Well, that's
it would
that's
be best if you just get acted.
Just quit there.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yep. Throw them in the club.
Never I could do this all day long, but I'm not.
I'll never play again.
That's how you do it. I got to go.
Yeah. See, golf's just not my game. I've got these little arms. I got little stubby arms. I
doesn't gator matter. Arms.
Doesn't short arms. I got like dinosaur arms.
Alligator arms.
Alligator arms. Little stubby alligator arms.
God, that's the arm that can't reach the check when everyone's time to pay, right?
But I can reach over my head, touch my ear.
And when you do, your arm rests on top of your head.
Shouldn't it?
Not if it's longer. My arm's not touching the top of my head, goofball.
He's got an anvil for a bicep, though.
All right.
All right. Just Rick.
Just put Rick, it away, Rick. There's stop. No guns you're, there. No.
You're embarrassing yourself.
Rick the guns.
Yeah, those are rubber band guns. Sorry.
You ever get shot with a rubber band gun?
Yeah.
Those aren't fun. How about a potato gun?
Well, you could kill somebody with a potato gun.
You could kill somebody with a potato gun.
Yep.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about those little pop guns?
No. I'm talking
about
that.
Are you talking about a potato cannon?
Potato cannon.
Which I don't know if we can even talk about that here on the air, can we? Is that...
Mr. Lawyer.
Well, here's something that's illegal that you're not supposed to ever do. Go ahead now.
Okay. Did you ever make the tennis ball cannon out of soda cans?
No, I did not. Can you...
Do that, Rick?
No,
you ever out when we ever did that?
Was that a thing?
Our friend Larry Klunk taught us
there you go. There
this.
You go.
It was a childhood thing. But you had to have the old steel-type soda cans that were straight,
yeah.
not an aluminum can.
Right, like the old style. Like
did you have to have a can opener?
When you open a can of Falstaff, it would be just...
right, they were just like a
straight up and down cylinder.
Straight up and down cylinder. So you had to have that because a tennis ball would fit exactly inside of one of those cans.
Oh, okay.
So you would take like six cans and you cut out the top and the bottom to where it like creates a cylinder. And then the last can that you attach it, and you use duct tape to connect them all. But the last can, you did not cut out the top or the bottom. And you just let the tennis ball slide down through it, go down through the first, you know, five cans, and then hit the top of that last can is when you would load it, okay? But before you did that,
okay.
You had a...
It just disturbs me that you know this.
You have a
detail.
Small hole in the bottom of the last can that you taped onto your thing. And then you would take some lighter fluid, and you'd squirt it down into the cylinder, and you'd swing it around in the air so where it, you know, like coated the inside of it. And then you would drop your tennis ball down there, which would force the vapors of the lighter fluid down into the last can.
This is so disturbing.
You'd take a cigarette lighter and hold it up to the little hole that you made, and it would shoot the tennis ball out.
And in a perfect world, not blow jagged pieces of aluminum or steel through your hand or arm.
You know, this is just a theory type thing. It's
not something anyone's ever done.
No.
But if you were
designing weapons
for the Army, this is something you might
submit
to
them. It was like a
them.
Cartoon type thing that I saw on the internet.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Very good.
Where everything is true.
And everything's right.
But anyway, in this cartoon, when they did it, it would shoot a tennis ball about 50 feet.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
And that cartoon was really cool. But they were pretty specific about their designs.
You know, we talked about the rubber band guns. That's just pretty much just a piece of wood with a nail on the end that you hook the rubber band around, and then another board that kind of bends
that
back.
Yeah, kind of pivots, you know.
And you let go of it. But
very
those
simple.
Things can deliver a nice snap of a big, thick rubber band.
Yes, they could.
You've been shot with one?
Yeah.
You've been shot with one, Greg?
I'm a child. No, I was a child at one point in time.
No, I don't think I've ever experienced that.
Did you ever take the rubber band and hook it between your, and then shoot a piece of paper?
Well, sure.
It's surprising with a good rubber band how much that'll go.
Yeah,
and if you graduated to like a paper clip.
Yep. Some, wow.
But we used to have those big red rubber bands.
Oh,
those were awesome.
Dennis has a package of those right now.
Red rubber bands?
The man's got
giant rubber bands.
The man's got everything down there.
He does. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, it's in a museum.
You know, my recollection is like in high school study hall that you guys would experiment with the rubber band and paper clips.
Yeah.
We play triangle football. With the paper,
you just—that's at the very last step before total boredom.
Yeah, it is. But we're in study hall.
Yeah,
and it's a great place to do bored things.
The other thing is you had the three pennies that you'd flick, and you had to keep flicking the one farthest the back between the other two until you got all the way across.
Wow! Wow, that's. Exciting.
That's almost as boring as this show.
Pretty much. We've gotten down to things we did in high school study hall.
When we get to the sections we're going to clip, there it is. We better do a commercial, Alan.
I think it's time.
Okay, this is the one. Commercial time. Today's program is being brought to you by Uncle Denno's Pickle Farm. Uncle Denno's got quite a variety of enterprises, doesn't he?
I was out at the Pickle Farm, man. It was pretty cool.
Uncle Denno's Pickle Farm. It's pickle season, and over at Uncle Denno's Orchards, the pickle trees are bursting with this year's crop of sweet, delicious pickles. Mm. Gherkins, cornichons, sweet dill pickles, got them all. If you want to pick a peck of your very own pickles, Uncle Den has a pick-your-own pickle orchard with dwarf pickle trees for easy pickle picking. We supply the pickle baskets and special pickle ladders so your young ones can have a memorable day out picking pickles.
You can pick them high or pick a low.
Oh, boy.
And looking for those special kosher dill pickles? Uncle Denno has that, too. Each season, a special trained Orthodox worm comes and snips the end off an entire row of young pickles. And it's done entirely in compliance with both Mosaic law and OSHA safety regulations, so you can be sure that no pickles were harmed in the process. So, when you've got a tickle for a pickle, come on down to Uncle Denno's Pickle Orchard and get to crunching.
Man, pickles and chicken.
A tickle for a pickle.
Pickles and chicken.
Hmm. I don't see how the, who's the company that makes pickles? Vlasic, right?
Vlasic. Kosher Dills.
They got that big stork that eats the pickles.
Right.
But he should say, do you have a tickle for a pickle?
You should say, do you have a tickle for a pickle?
That's a good marketing line there, Rick.
You need to copyright that.
You bet.
Right now, because once this podcast is out there, man, it's gone.
It's done. Too late. Public domain. Greg did the same commercial
a couple weeks
ago.
I know. And we should have put a bib on him before he did it, because it was just spitting stuff all over.
Oh, like you didn't.
Pickle juice.
Pick a peck of pickle peppers. Still, at least you've got screen on your mic. So it didn't pop through the entire thing.
I had to replace mine. You know, you mentioned me reffing on the intro.
Yeah, refereeing.
Okay, so
Greg Ringhausen, referee.
Yeah.
Was this before or after you were a sexy model?
Before.
Okay.
So my first varsity high school basketball game was in a place where they had
that you were refereeing, not participating.
That is correct.
Okay.
And I didn't know who was playing, the two teams playing, until I got there, as one of the biggest rivalries in the state.
And do you remember the teams?
Yeah.
Do you remember the state?
No, no, no.
Who were the teams?
Quincy, Notre Dame, and right across the river, I can't remember the name of the team. But anyway.
Hannibal.
And they were playing.
The Hannibal Lecters.
It could be, but they play in a pit there where they have a balcony go all the way around. And so when you're underneath the basket officiating, there's people right above you. I mean, just right above you.
Never want that.
No, found that out. So I told this story maybe before on the radio, but anyway, I was about a quarter in the ball game, and I mean, it was a rough game, calling fouls left and right.
Is this your first game ever?
Yeah, just, you know, my mouth was so dry, it was just, you know, I could hardly blow the whistle. But anyway, get underneath the basket, officiating the free throw for the opposing team, and this one guy calls out, "Call something, you big nose zebra." So I thought, I kind of looked up. I thought, this is not good tonight.
You're out of here.
So I'd like
and
to.
And you're out of here. And you're out. And just start.
So nobody was
left.
No, but no, that was my first occasion of being called anything I can ever remember. So,
okay, when you,
I can't hardly believe that.
I know it. Isn't that awful?
I think you've been called names your whole life. When you're
nice touch.
When you're refereeing basketball game. Now, are you running to half court and back each time?
No, you got, well,
are you going
change.
To full court?
You change it on a foul or a different time of possession, so you're changing half court. You're basically going half court.
Back and forth.
Back and forth until you, but every time
until
there's
you
a,
like puke your brains out?
No, it's not that bad, but you change position with the other official. Now there's three. When I was reffing, there's two. And at every different possession, a change of possession, you change places and you'd be at the other.
So one guy stands at the end and the other one runs back and forth with
him. No, it's just it's like that, but I mean, it's all.
So you're still running all night no matter which side.
Well,
you
yeah, get. I mean, it's, yeah, it's
basketball.
Did you
ever have a referee with another referee who you didn't think was very good, wasn't keeping up his part, wasn't making good calls?
You look over and
you had to throw him out?
You look over and he's sitting with the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
That's Mr. Sexy here.
Yeah, that was.
There's Greg, more. Come on. The game's going on.
Hey, they want pictures with me.
Yeah, I got to go. Go ahead and call that. It's fine. No, it's probably more of the times the guy, other guy was thinking I was lousy, you know.
No, it's that the game ends and the cheerleaders beat him up.
But it was always nice to have one of the family members in the audience. And
oh, they're the worst ones.
Oh,
they're the best referees.
Yes, they are. And one particular uncle was very good. He was very good.
Uncle Casey?
Yes.
He was a...
The mighty Casey.
He was awesome.
Thrown out.
The mighty Casey has been thrown out.
He was at a football... I played in a football game, and he came over after the game, and the officials were walking off the field, and he pulled the flag out of one official's back pocket. He said, there, that's the first time it's been out of your pocket all night.
With an explicative?
Yes, big time. And all the players are going, yeah, all right.
And how did that official react?
He didn't pick up his flag. He just kept walking.
Just walked on.
Yes.
Just let it go.
Yep.
So
he,
when you
he
leave
was the bigger man.
When you yep. leave a game where there's been controversial calls, I mean, do you kind of fear for your life that you're going to get stuff thrown at you as you walk out of the gym?
I did that night in Quincy, yeah. I thought, you know.
Really?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it's just the fact that, thank God the home team won. And, that was nice, but...
Okay, you decide you want to be a referee, right?
Yeah.
At some point you said, you know what I'd like is to tell people the way it is.
Yeah.
To use my knowledge. When you decide to be a referee, I mean, do you just go sign a form and they say, okay, here's your game? I mean, do you have to take courses or well, prove to them that you actually know anything?
There's a test or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, there's a test. And then you've got to get a athletic director and a superintendent to sign off on you. And then...
Well, yeah, but that would be your dad and your uncle. I mean, they might sign off on you whether you know anything or not.
It couldn't be related. So it wasn't my dad or my uncle. So... But I went to Carrollton and got that done. And I took a class at Western on officiating.
Really?
Yeah.
And what does that entail?
A lot of physical fighting and pushing and shoving, and you're trying to call stuff. And
is this the cheerleaders again?
Yeah. It was a girls' league. So you learn by the seat of your pants, basically, but that was a big help going
so
up there and do that.
Do they, like, stage different fouls to see whether you
no,
can call
it's
them?
Just it's just a bunch of guys just, you know, drinking beer and playing basketball.
And you have to ref the game.
Yep.
What do you do when somebody, what do you call when somebody does this? What kind of a foul is that, Ringhausen?
That's intentional and the guy's gone. So
now, can you get a sense that the players know when the ref isn't really calling things and that the game will go
oh, yeah.
take advantage of it?
Oh, yeah. They,
well,
yeah.
this guy doesn't call anything.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want.
Well, so, then there's a lot of elbows.
Just let me throw that back. You can kind of pace the game, you know, on how much you allow each team to do. So you try to call it really tight at the beginning so then it kind of flows, hopefully. But if you let things go in the early part of the game, it's going to get nasty.
Okay, do you have one get out of control?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Well, did you just leave?
I didn't take a shower. I just took my clothes and went home. Yeah.
No, I mean during the game.
No, I did not. Okay. No.
There's still 5 minutes left. I don't care. You're not listening to me anyway. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
No,
you haven't had one where the cops got called in?
No, I haven't had that.
That's happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're like both like, yeah, that's the one.
I haven't had anybody throw money on the floor at that time or anything like
that. Is that a thing? What's that?
Oh, yeah.
Like you're being bribed?
Yeah. The other team's bribing you. Here's some more money for you. Yeah. That'll get everybody's
attention.
You've
obviously taken money earlier. Here's some more.
And that gets people pointing fingers at that. You know, well, there's the guy that did it right there.
When, let's say that you're going and the game was the game at Quincy or Hannibal?
Quincy.
Do you just go into it automatically going, well, it's the home team. I got to take care of that.
No.
That's the way refereeing is. Everybody knows it. Anytime you watch like the NFL refs, it's like, well, they're taking care of this team.
Yeah.
I've seen some games where it's been like that. Sometimes you think, oh, they're making these calls to make it a closer game.
Make it a closer game, yeah. Right. Or that they've botched some horrible call the time before, so they're going to even it up by calling some equally horrible call on the other side.
Or New Orleans and L.A., I think, and the guy got interfered and they didn't call it, and the other team won, and it was just everybody's going crazy in New Orleans. Because they would have won.
Everybody's
the game.
Already crazy in New Orleans.
There you go.
Do they tell you that you never call traveling on the stars?
No. Just call the game.
This guy's got a future in the NBA, and we want you to just kind of leave him alone,
go.
Okay?
Yeah.
He's going for the school record in scoring. Just let him do what he wants. Uh-huh. He's jumping on other guys' backs to slam dunk it. Look good to me.
I didn't see a foul.
Like Ted Williams shags a real close single for his last hit of the game to get 400, and Greg's standing there as a referee at first base. Out! He's in Boston, so they all
he's
pour
five
out
feet
of the
past.
Stands and beat you to death.
Don't get out of the stadium.
Yeah.
When you guys go back to Boston, you know, the wife's hometown.
My cousin from Boston.
Does she get into that whole Boston thing? You guys have to go to a Boston game and she gets all riled up and yelling and wanting to fight with you?
Well, that doesn't have anything to do with going to a game. But yeah, when she drives in Boston.
Family reunion.
When she drives in Boston, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, let me tell you something.
What does
though.
She drive in Boston?
Me crazy!
No.
Oh, that's good.
What is the vehicle called?
You mean the car?
The car.
The car, yeah. Can I use the car tonight?
We're going to go down to the
bar. No.
Okay, sorry.
She's been cured of all that.
Cured.
She speaks regular English now.
Midwest English.
Like
brainwashed it out of her.
When we went to the Biltmore out in North Carolina,
yes,
those people in North Carolina drove more aggressively than any drivers I've ever seen in any other area. It was amazing.
More so than you.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
So much that they get off the side of the road and just have fist fights, right?
Yeah. You should have been there to ref that one.
Yeah, that'd been a good one.
Girls in there.
Boxing.
Boxing
ref would be one of the hardest ones, I think, trying to separate those big guys.
You think if Greg had pulled up while those two women were fighting alongside the road, they would have stopped and said, hey,
he's
sexy guy.
I just stop.
You stop and fight instantly.
Spread my sexiness everywhere I go.
It's amazing how that works.
Well, you're going to have to spread it some other time because we're out of time.
How can that be possible?
It yes. goes by fast.
All right. This is the Illegal Move episode.
Illegal Move episode 13.
In the can.
I'm glad you joined us.
Have a good evening.
See you later.
Greg Gator.
Rick Gator.
Alligator.
All right.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour, brought to you by Heaver's Coffee. One cup and you'll be a heaver forever. My Uncle Den's Roasters taste just like chicken, but it's not. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Federation. See you later from Greg Gator, Rick Gator, and Alligator. This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network.